When I first came to the district, I thought it incumbent on me to provide light conversation in return for their hospitality, but the questioning glances they exchanged with each other silenced me effectively. So this morning, I attacked the food without preamble. But the first mouthful almost made me break my newfound rule. It was the first time I had tasted a homemade Yorkshire sausage, and it was an effort to restrain the cries of congratulation which would have been natural in other circles. But Mrs. Cooper had been watching me out of the corner of her eye, and she must have noticed my rapt expression. Casually, she rose, brought over the frying pan, and rolled a few more links onto my plate. "Killed a pig last week," she said, pulling open the pantry door. I could see the dishes heaped with chopped meat, spare rib, liver, the rows of pies with the jelly gleaming on their pale gold crusts. I finished my meal, pulled on a thick pair of socks borrowed from Dan, and my dry shoes. I was about to leave when Mrs. Cooper tucked a parcel under my arm. I knew it contained further samples from the pantry, but her eyes dared me to say much about it. I muttered a few words of thanks and went out to the car. The church clock was chiming 9:15 when I pulled up outside Skeldale House. I felt good, warm, full of superb food and with the satisfying memory of the cow's quick recovery. And there was my parcel on the back seat. It was always a stroke of luck to land on a farm after a pig killing, and there was usually a gift from the hospitable farmers, but these sausages were something I would never forget. I took the surgery steps at a jump and trotted along the passage, but as I rounded the corner, my progress was halted. Siegfried was standing there, rigid, his back pressed against the wall. Over his shoulder dangled a long, flexible leather probang. Between us was the half-open door of the office, with Miss Harbottle clearly visible at her desk. I waved cheerily. "Hello, hello, off to a choke!" Siegfried's face twisted in anguish, and he held up a warning hand. Then he began to creep past the door, balancing on the balls of his feet like a tightrope walker. He was beyond the door, and the tense lines of his body had begun to relax when the brass end of the swinging probang clattered against the wall, and, as if in reply, came the familiar rumble from Miss Harbottle's corner. Siegfried gave me a single despairing glance, then, shoulders drooping, he went slowly into the room. Watching him go, I thought wonderingly of how things had built up since the secretary's arrival. It was naked war now, and it gave life an added interest to observe the tactics of the two sides. At the beginning, it seemed that Siegfried must run out an easy winner. He was the employer. He held the reins, and it appeared that Miss Harbottle would be helpless in the face of his obstructive strategy. But Miss Harbottle was a fighter, and a resourceful one, and it was impossible not to admire the way she made use of the weapons at her command. In fact, over the past week, the tide had been running in her favor. She had been playing Siegfried like an expert fisherman with a salmon, bringing him repeatedly back to her desk to answer footling questions. Her throat clearing had developed into an angry bark, which could penetrate the full extent of the house. And she had a new weapon. She had taken to writing Siegfried's clerical idiocies on slips of paper, misspellings, errors in addition, wrong entries. They were all faithfully copied down. Miss Harbottle used these slips as ammunition. She never brought one out when things were slack and her employer was hanging about the surgery. She saved them until he was under pressure. Then she would push a slip under his nose and say, "How about this?" She always kept an expressionless face at these times, and it was impossible to say how much pleasure it gave her to see him cower back like a whipped animal. But the end was unvarying. Mumbled explanations and apologies from Siegfried, and Miss Harbottle, radiating self-righteousness, correcting the entry. As Siegfried went into the room, I watched him through the partly open door. I knew my morning round was waiting, but I was impelled by morbid curiosity. Miss Harbottle, looking brisk and businesslike, was tapping an entry in the book with her pen, while Siegfried shuffled his feet and muttered replies. He made several vain attempts to escape, and as the time passed, I could see he was nearing breaking point. His teeth were clenched and his eyes had started to bulge. The phone rang, and the secretary answered it. Her employer was making again for the door when she called happily, "Colonel Brent for you." Like a man in a dream, he turned back. The colonel, a racehorse owner, had been a thorn in our flesh for a long time, with his complaints and his continual questioning and probing. A call from him was always liable to send up the blood pressure. I could see that it was that way this morning. The minutes ticked away and Siegfried's face got redder. He made his replies in a choked voice, which finally rose almost to a shout. At the end, he crashed the receiver down and leant on the desk, breathing heavily. Then, as I watched, unbelieving, Miss Harbottle began to open the drawer where she kept her slips. She fished one out, coughed, and held it in Siegfried's face. "How about this?" she asked. I resisted the impulse to close my eyes and stared in horror. For a few seconds, nothing happened, and there was a tense interval while Siegfried stood quite motionless. Then his face seemed to break up, and with a scything sweep of his arm, he snatched the slip from the secretary's hand and began to tear it with fierce intensity. He didn't say a word, but as he tore, he leant forward over the desk, and his glaring eyes approached even nearer to Miss Harbottle, who slowly edged her chair back till it was jammed against the wall. It was a weird picture. Miss Harbottle straining back, her mouth slightly open, her tinted curls bobbing in alarm, and Siegfried, his ravaged features close to hers, still tearing with insane vigor at the piece of paper. The scene ended when Siegfried, putting every ounce of his strength into an action like a javelin thrower, hurled the torn-up slip at the waste paper basket. It fell in a gentle shower like confetti in and around the basket, and Siegfried, still without speaking, wrapped his probang around him and strode from the room. In the kitchen, Mrs. Hall opened the parcel and extracted a pie, a chunk of liver, and a cluster of the exquisite sausages. She turned a quizzical eye on me. "You look kind of pleased with yourself this morning, Mr. Elliot." I leant back against the oak dresser. "Yes, Mrs. Hall, I've just been thinking. It must be very nice to be the principal of a practice, but you know, it's not such a bad life being an assistant."